Greg Bishop joins us on Sports Byline, Sports Illustrated writer who wrote an insightful story called A College QB's Suicide, A Family Search for Answers. And I might ask that you also check out SI's documentary on this story called Losing Tyler. Greg, why don't you tell everybody the story of Tyler Hilinski?
Yeah, you know, I guess the basic gist of it is Tyler Hilinski grew up in a football family in Southern California. He's from Orange County originally. He's got an older brother and a younger brother. All three of them played college football, or the younger one will, in a year and a half. The parents are happy. They have normal jobs. And Tyler went to Washington State to play quarterback for Mike Leach. And while there, he backed up Luke Falk and, was learning the position and even played in a few games last year, had some real success. And then in January, he took his own life on January 16th. And so the story is essentially about the family, how they came to be this terrible, terrible event that happens to them, and then what they decide to do in terms of trying to deal with it.
He was 21 years old. And tell everybody on January 16th, 2018, what happened.
Yeah, so he's 21 years old, and on January 16th, he wakes up and has what seems like a normal day. He's texting with his brother, wanting to play video games later. He's taking a teammate to class. He's trying to schedule a workout for his receivers later that afternoon, and then all of a sudden, he just goes dark. There's no correspondence with the brother. He turns off his Find the Location app on the cell phone. He stops returning phone calls and text messages. And late in the afternoon, they find out that he had shot himself in the closet of a former roommate who had since left the university. And two of his teammates found him. They called the family immediately. Family rushed up to pull him in the next day. And, you know, that's really when the search for answers started.
You know, it's interesting about this story because there is no indication in his background, his family life, or anything that would indicate that he had any type of problem at all. And when they did, certainly the autopsy, there was no drugs or alcohol found in his system. He was a successful young quarterback. He had played in a bowl game, and he had also had a game in that bowl game. It was kind of his best game because it was the Holiday Bowl, and they beat Boise State 47-44. But when you think about, you know, this young man, this is inexplicable. You can't explain this in this particular case, can you?
I think it just sort of speaks to, you know, mental health and how we really never know what somebody is carrying into their lives. You know, here was a kid who his whole life wanted to be a college or an NFL quarterback, who grew up in a seemingly well-adjusted family that had the means to, you know, help him do whatever he wanted to do in life. You know, he had good relationships with his family, had good relationships with his coaches. I never told any of them that he felt depressed or that he was having dark thoughts or that he was having trouble, you know, navigating, you know, typical college athletic life, which is filled with pressure and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think that just really speaks to the randomness of life and to, you know, the fact that we just don't know what people carry with them into every day. I mean, here was a kid who was hurting, you know, who was really trying to sort through whatever he was going through, and yet for all the support that was around him, for all the resources that were available, there was something internal and intrinsic in him that he didn't feel like he could speak out or ask for help. And, you know, that's the work his parents are really trying to do now, to sort of change mindsets and stigmas so that, you know, kids like him will be able to reach out for help in the future.
You know what's interesting, and it's a dichotomy, and it's certainly out of character with everything I think most people know about this young man and his family, is that he stole the gun that he killed himself with. And as I read through your story, I kept saying, why? What would do something like that? Because he never shot a gun before, and he only learned to use it the day before he killed himself.
Yeah, that to me was one of the things that sort of shows just how deep the pain he was in seemed to be. You know, he wasn't telling anybody about this stuff, but he took the unusual step of having taken an AR-15 assault rifle from a teammate 3 days before he committed suicide. You know, in that 3-day time period, he had even gone out with the group to search for the gun, you know, knowing that he had already taken it. The police later found two bullet holes, one in the car door and one in the room where he ultimately committed suicide. And, you know, they surmised that that was him not knowing how to handle the gun and accidentally firing it. And then on top of all that, he went clay shooting with teammates the very day before his suicide And essentially what they were trying to do that day was to teach him how to hit the gun. At the end of the session, you know, there's 10 guys gathered around him, and they're shooting at these targets, and they're trying to help him and coaching him up. And they said that he never hit even a single target. And so that to them only reinforced that he didn't even know how to handle a gun. And yet the very next afternoon is when everything happened. And so it was a lot of dots like that that I think the family has been wrestling with and trying to figure out, you know, why this might have happened. And I think clearly they feel that, you know, something was wrong and that he wasn't able to tell them why.
Greg, you know as well as I do, the pain is deep under a circumstance like this, but I think probably the greater pain is not knowing why. I mean, you look at every angle, and especially a close-knit family like the Helsinkis are, you just have to wonder. And yet I thought what his father said is probably the strongest statement. He said, the reality is we missed it, and we let him down. It's understandable, but in a sense, do you get the sense that they did let him down in any way?
Yeah, you know, I think when they look back, if they look hard enough, they can see signs that something with him was at minimum different. You know, there was a time period in December and January where he wasn't as responsive to text messages or phone calls. There was a game against Arizona that he came in late in the first half, threw for 500 yards, but threw four picks, and they lost. He had a lot of trouble getting over that game in a way that struck his family as unusual. He had taken a hit against Arizona that he told his brother that had rocked him. There's all these tiny little things that if they look back and put it together, they could see at minimum that something in Tyler had changed, that something was different with him. It's something they'll probably always feel guilty about and something that they really shouldn't feel guilty for. And so I felt for them as I reported the story, just imagining what that's like to give your kid every resource that you can to love them and send them to college and be happy with where everything is going. And then to get this kind of news one day, I just couldn't even imagine what that must feel like.
And Tyler certainly did bury that pain, whatever pain he had for whatever reason, deep inside of him. And I know Mike Lynch, he could not give you any explanation. And the family stood in the training room with his former teammates. They were crying, and they, you know, talked to them, and yet even his teammates had no hint of any problem with him.
Yeah, in fact, you know, some of his teammates told stories that Tyler used to take them to counseling. So he would grab a teammate who was having trouble with something, and he would drive them to the psychologist, not knowing, not revealing that he himself could have used the session. And, you know, that's the way that they described him, the guy who let them borrow clothes or paid for pizza or did anything he could, you know, taking them to class, helping them as much as possible. And yet none of them at all could recall a time when he had told them he was struggling or hurting or needed help. You know, there were a few people that he was close with that he had mentioned that, he was having some dark thoughts to, but none of them were his teammates. None of them were his coaches. None of them were his parents.
And as puzzling as everything else is, he did leave a suicide note, but it offered no explanation, no I love you, no goodbye. And I am thinking about it, and I've known other people who have been in these type of positions. I can't figure that one out either. Do you have any other insight, Greg?
Well, I know what the note said, but they've asked me to keep the contents
right.
Private. What I can say is that, you know, they were hoping that the note would say, I was really hurting. I feel terrible. I can't believe I'm doing this to you guys. Or even, hey, it's not your fault. I don't blame you. Or even just, hey, I'm sorry. I can tell you with certainty that it said none of those things. It really didn't say anything at all. And so, you know, if this family is sort of looking for answers and really searching the depths of their souls to try to figure out what happened, that was one thing, I think, where they thought they might get an answer and instead got absolutely nothing back. And it just sort of fit more with the overall idea of they're never going to really understand why this happened. And at some point in time, you know, for them it was, you know, as the months went on after his death, where they just decided that they couldn't look at it that way, that they had to care more about the work they could do moving forward, that they had to build his legacy, that they had to honor his life and what it meant. And you know, to me, that was a very pivotal shift for the family and their story, this idea that they wouldn't be able to find out why it had happened and they'd have to make it into something, you know, that was more powerful and more lasting.
There is another angle to the Tyler Helsinki life story. As I pointed out earlier, the toxicology report showed no trace of drugs or alcohol, but the Mayo Clinic findings were very interesting. Tell everybody about them.
Yeah, so they get this letter from the Mayo Clinic. They had sent the brain away, you know, a day or two after he had died. And the diagnosis essentially is that he has stage one CTE, so the lowest form of the degenerative brain disease that comes from getting hit in the head a lot. And we've seen that, you know, former players who have committed suicide, former NFL players like Junior Seau, have had the same disease. Well, we've seen that a lot of players who exhibited erratic behavior or had anxiety or, you know, all these different sort of symptoms had posthumously been diagnosed with CTE. And so this for the family is a really interesting and sad sort of turning point in their story, because not only do they all love football and not only did their lives as a family revolve around the game, but they have a younger son, you know, Ryan Helsinki, who's one of the top-rated quarterbacks in the class of 2019. He's committed to play at South Carolina. They sort of laid out all the information they could gather for him, all the risks of CTE, this worry that maybe, you know, with the same genes and the same sport and the same position that he could, you know, ultimately have some of the issues that his brother did. And he took all their information and decided, you know, he still wants to play. He wants to honor his brother by playing football. And, you know, you just get the sense from the parents, like, they're not going to blame football for his death. They don't want to say it was the main factor in why he committed suicide, but they know enough to know that there seems to be some sort of pattern here, that they want to study it further, and that it scares them that their youngest son is going to continue playing. And so, I mean, that's just a ton of stuff to try to sort through and deal with as you're going through everything else, just with the suicide attempt.
There is a stinging condemnation of football, or just the contact nature of what he was doing in football, because the family gave the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota their son's brain and for autopsy and study, and the results really stunned the family. And here's the quote from Mark, his dad. The medical examiner said that he had the brain of a 65-year-old, which is really hard to take. Now, in your story, you pointed out that really he wasn't a heavy-duty football guy, if you know what I'm saying, taking a lot of a beating. So if he had the brain of a 65-year-old, Greg, at this point in his career, you can imagine what that does to your body and your brain when you play this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Tyler was a guy that he played quarterback, so it's the most protected position on the field. You know, he was a backup quarterback for most of his college career, so he didn't get into games that much. And he had all these sort of markers where you would think that, you know, he wouldn't be a likely candidate to have CTE. And then I think when you look closely at it, you know, here's a kid that played linebacker when he was growing up. They called him Mini Urlacher because he was really good at making tackles. He thinks he had a concussion in his freshman season. He got rocked by that hit in Arizona. And I think the most reasonable conclusion that leads you to is that, you know, people who play football, even at young ages, even before they become the kind of player that Tyler Helsinki ultimately became, are putting themselves at risk. And it's not like it's 5 years into their career or 10 years into their career. It's right away. And, you know, this is a kid who had most of his contact when he was a younger child, and who ultimately segued into a position where he's not hit as much, and a playing role where he wasn't even playing all that much. And so, you know, I think what the parents are trying to figure out is, like, was he genetically predisposed to get CTE? Did this happen to him before he even went to college? Was it exacerbated by the hit in the Arizona game? These are all the things they're trying to sort through in their mind as they try to figure out, you know, how much meaning they want to assign to CTE and how much meaning they just, you know, will never actually know.
Greg, I want to thank you, first of all, for writing this story, because you wrote it very insightfully, also with a lot of sensitivity. And I think it's something that if people will, you know, read this, particularly if you're parents of young kids that are in combative sports, football, you can even get it in soccer as well, that they'll pay attention to this. Thank you very much for your time, and you're welcome here anytime on Sports Byline, Greg.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Greg Bishop, again, Sports Illustrated writer. He wrote the insightful story. Check it out, A College QB's Suicide, A Family's Search for Answers. And also, if you get the opportunity, check out the documentary that they've done, SI. It's called Losing Tyler. We continue on Sports Byline.